Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Ghostly Grounds. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Today's a very special day on the podcast because today we're talking about a place very near and dear to my heart, an arena at my very own alma mater, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. But we won't be talking about my time there, drinking Everclear and wearing tube tops back in the aughts. Never mind, it doesn't matter. No, we're going to be going back much further, before my beloved football stadium, Camp Randall, the oldest stadium in the Big Ten, had thousands of students screaming jump around in red and white. The area was a site for more activity than my little collegiate self could ever imagine. Today on Ghost Town, the disturbing history of an athletic institution. May I present to you the haunted history of Camp Randall at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. 1,000 years ago, Camp Randall, located at 1440 Monroe Street, at the corner of Monroe and Regent Streets, on the west side of the UW campus, was a sacred space. It was the site of burial rituals by the Ho-Chunk Nation, according to University of Wisconsin-Madison Historic and Cultural Resources Manager Daniel Einstein. By the time European settlers arrived in the 1800s, the land was used as the State Agricultural Society Fairgrounds, home of the Wisconsin State Fair, a place for the buying, showing, selling, and celebration of Wisconsin livestock and other products, the first of which took place in 1858. But of course, all of that changed on April 12, 1861, with the official outbreak of the Civil War. The then Governor Alexander Randall asked the State Agricultural Society to convert the land for military use, to train volunteer Union soldiers for battle. It wasn't much of a question, though, because Alexander Randall wasn't the type of guy who would take no for an answer. He was a fierce abolitionist who had threatened Wisconsin would secede from the Union if Abraham Lincoln didn't win the presidency and end slavery. Of course, Randall got what he wanted, and then some, but we'll get to that. Throughout the war, some 70,000 soldiers, the majority of Wisconsin's troops, were based out of Camp Randall's 10 acres, with the rest of the massive 53-acre plot housing 40 barracks, a hospital, and anything and everything else the Union soldiers might need. And soon, they were off to battle. In March 1862, the 1st Alabama Infantry Regiment was captured by the Union forces after a 23-day siege. 5,000 Confederate prisoners were sent north, mostly to St. Louis, but many to Camp Randall. Now, as I've said, Camp Randall was a peaceful little training space, and not exactly a prison to house Confederate war criminals. According to the Madison Historical Society, on April 19th, the first group of 881 rebels got to Madison by train, with more waves as time went on. They were filthy, their shoes were in disrepair, and the, quote, cold, raw wind of our backward spring was striking through their thin jean clothes. Madison residents were curious, to say the least, but of course, kindly Midwesterners before enemies. They sent jellies, custard, brandy, shirts, and reading material to the camp for the prisoners, and even came out to visit Camp Randall to see what these Confederate soldiers were all about. To say the facility was ill-prepared for the sheer volume of soldiers would be an understatement, with viruses and illnesses spread rapidly throughout the camp. There was no fence around Camp Randall, and initially townspeople came and went freely. With people sick and taking advantage of this free-for-all, several prisoners escaped, including two who were recaptured by a Madisonian, Peter B. Fields. A guard named Amos Carr was caught accepting a bribe to help another rebel escape, and according to the State Historical Society, quote, he is now imprisoned in irons in a tent by himself under a special guard. More and more prisoners of war came to Camp Randall, the newest group more torn up than the last, suffering from wounds, malnutrition, and disease, sent by boat because most were too sick to travel by train at that point, and carried by stretchers into the camp. By April 28th, the POWs began to perish, and those in the best condition were quickly moved elsewhere. Despite having resources from locals, for the next 2 months, the Wisconsin State Journal listed the prisoners who had died every night, day after day, mostly from malaria fever or severe bowel affliction. A mass grave soon began to be filled at the nearby Forest Hill Cemetery. The stone cenotaph that contained the names of the prisoners was eventually removed and then transferred to a storage unit at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. Ultimately, 140 men died on site during the camp's brief existence as a prison, with more than 1,200 Confederate prisoners being held there between April and June 1862. At this point, as you might imagine, Camp Randall, no longer a bustling hub for agriculture, was now a place of suffering and death. Quote, "It was not a happy place to be," said Mike Huberty, the founder of American Ghost Walks and the host of the Other Side podcast. "And so that's why at Camp Randall and around the area, people have not only seen football games, but many, many spirits of wandering, listless, and confused Confederate soldiers." We'll talk about that after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you doing?
Hey.
We're checking in.
Hello, hello.
We want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town.
Hello.
We thank you so much.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And we got to thank that government. Mm. I can't wait to thank governments.
It's true. This is your favorite part. The thanking of the governments.
They don't get enough thanks.
Mm-mm.
And we're here to fix that.
That's right.
We want to say hello to those mayors. In a past life, they've haunted a sports-based event.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a huge coincidence.
This is a huge coincidence.
It's really huge.
This is kind of wild.
Yeah, it works out great for us. This mayor haunted a very, very important event. The very first pickleball game.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, this is a good one.
They're like,
this is going to be annoying.
Palm Springs in 100 degree heat. Let's do this. Woo.
I still don't really know exactly what it is. No. I think I have a little bit of an idea.
You haven't watched many episodes of reality TV where one of the lame activities is them playing pickleball?
No.
Well,
I feel like, I mean, there's probably nothing wrong with it, and I'm sure it's fine, makes people happy. But I feel like if somebody was like, hey, what's up? You want to play pickleball?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I would want
to
do.
Yeah, we're too out of shape to play tennis, and we want to reject badminton, which is essentially a different version of pickleball. So let's do this thing, which is like tennis for shitty people.
You're going to want to thank Ashley Mattson for haunting those shitty people.
Get him, Ashley.
Now, this mayor haunted what I thought pickleball was. That's how out of touch I am with things like this. This mayor haunted the very first cornhole.
Yeah.
Thing.
I can see how you might confuse the two.
Is that throwing a thing into a hole?
Yeah, it's a beanbag, and you throw the beanbags into holes in a kind of a plank that it's at an angle. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, they knew what it was. And they haunted the first one.
Yeah. Watch your holes.
It's old. Watch your holes. It's all cat. Watch your holes, Joselle.
Hello.
This mayor goes way back in the haunting. They haunted the very first Taibo class. Remember Taibo?
I do. With Billy Blanks?
Billy Blanks,
yeah. God, I lost a precious memory because I knew that man's name.
Yeah.
It's very sad. It's very sad.
What did you lose to keep that?
Probably like my grandmother's smile.
Yeah. Billy Blanks' smile is pretty good.
Okay.
So this mayor haunted a little Taibo and saw Billy Blanks' smile. I was like, this is going to be annoying.
Oh, so you call it a Taibo.
Yeah.
One unit of Taibo.
Yeah, it's one unit of measurement. That's Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
This mayor was like, this is annoying. I'm going to haunt it.
That's how it works.
Haunted the very first CrossFit class.
Whoa, were you there?
No, but I did do CrossFit for 6 years, like pretty, and I did compete in CrossFit.
I remember. You were like, whenever you talk about it, you're like, I don't like to talk about this, but I do CrossFit. And you have like a little inspiration.
Yeah, it's a little,
you're like,
yeah.
I hate this and I hate myself, but
I like doing it. But I mean, you know, enough is enough. I did like Tough Mudder and all that kind of stuff. It was wild. It was dangerous.
Fun.
I don't know what I was thinking. Well, this mayor knew better. Haunted it. It's Casey Weber.
Hello.
This mayor was like, by name alone, I'm haunting this thing. I don't know what it is.
Have to.
And who, is it a made up word? He's like, I don't like that. kind of fitness.
They're like, we can send you like a beautiful medieval castle. And she's like, no.
I want to haunt the very first Zumba class. Gotta get him.
Say,
it's probably fine. It's probably fine. Probably a really great workout. But also,
I mean, I think if you're under 35, you just don't know what it is, I would imagine. If you're under 35,
I am under 35 in this scenario.
Okay.
In this scenario.
Okay.
Or I'm just wildly out of touch. That's Matthew Clemens, Lorraine.
Hello.
This mayor was like, no friggin' way. This will get annoying quick. It'll get dated quick. This mayor haunted the first axe throwing bar or club or whatever it is.
It's like you go play pickleball and in a tourney,
yeah,
and then you go to an axe throwing thing with your friends to have some points.
Yeah, yeah. You have an IPA. You want to throw some axes? Yeah, I have a beer. Do you? Yeah.
They bring their own beers. Yeah.
It's
BYOB at the axe throwing arena.
Is it 2018? Yes or no? Well, this mayor was like, I know what's going on here, and yeah, I'm going to put an end to that.
Get them. Get their asses.
That's Marissa Rothermill.
Hello.
And then our governor. Got no time for any of this. Makes money on all of it, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Gets a piece.
Oh, those checks that come in, they are formidable.
Every time you throw an axe, you pickle a ball, you corn a hole. You zoom a buh.
Yeah.
You cross a fit. I don't know what she said. Gets a little piece of all of it. She's like, I love it all.
Yeah. She's like, keep the bullshit coming.
She's like, you white people. You got disposable income,
exactly.
And I hate you for it, and exactly. I'll take everything you got.
Mm-hmm.
Loves it all. Our governor,
Avian
Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episodes, just the good stuff, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Now, I think I have one nice review. This is a nice review in a sea of not nice reviews. This is a pretty good, honest one. Better than you might expect. 5 stars. It's kind of like, oh, I thought you were going to be dumpier, but yeah, you actually like seem like you're okay.
Yeah, you're like, oh, the stale cookie that I bought at a bakery and has been sitting in my countertop for 2 days?
Yeah.
Huh. Actually, I ate it all.
Yeah.
Great.
Despite the fact that some episodes are barely longer in length than a pop song, despite Rebecca's microphone sometimes having an annoying hissing sound, and despite the fact, a lot of caveats, that I've heard one ad by the home repair middleman enough to have it memorized, I guess it's working.
Wow, that's advertising.
I simply can't stop listening to this podcast. I usually find it interesting, sometimes very interesting. I love the host's sense of humor, and they consistently put out 2 episodes every single week. I hope this podcast continues for the foreseeable future. That's Jeem to the extreme in the U.S. and A. That was a nice, honest.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Because you know that they're not bullshitting you, because
right,
they're like, here's the things that like annoy me. But then they say nice things, too, and we get it. Listen, we're a work in progress. Give us another 6 years. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Give us another 6 years, and if that's not enough, give us another 6, baby.
Yeah,
and that's 3 sixes, and that's the devil. That's when the devil comes.
Yeah, then you get a 2-minute episode about that.
Then the devil's like, we'll give
enough.
You your soul back. We sold it for this podcast. Not worth it.
No.
But if you haven't left a review and you want to, leave it anywhere. It all helps. We appreciate
Please.
It. And if you left it somewhere that's not Apple or maybe Spotify or something like that, alert us to it and we'll read it on here.
Yeah. We're getting into spooky season.
Yeah.
We got some fun things coming up. So hopefully it'll be good enough for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just enough.
Or get that home repair middleman thing, which I've never heard. Maybe I don't know if it's regional or how it works, but I'm glad that home repair middleman's getting that money.
They're getting that money.
Do you want to get back into this money?
Let's get back into this money. Get back to Wisconsin again, where I'm from and what we're talking about. So after being a state fairground, a union training center, a POW camp, and essentially a place for Confederate suffering and death, Madison desperately wanted to rehab the area's image, forgetting what had transpired in the years before. In 1917, Camp Randall Stadium was built for the nearby university football games, and for a while it seemed as though history had been forgotten. But of course, it had not. Ghosts from the Civil War seemed to consistently make appearances, and despite not knowing the stadium's history, many have reported, kind of confused, and rightly so, seeing figures in Wisconsin in Confederate garb. Wisconsin, again, is pretty far north for that kind of thing until you do the research that we've just discussed and realize how many Confederates were imprisoned in the area. During the tradition of tailgating, where students and fans get very drunk and hyped by their cars while awaiting a game, tailgaters have described seeing spirits in uniforms, as well as various slings and bandages, wandering in and out of the stadium, seemingly oblivious to the thousands of rowdy fans. These tailgates can often start at 5 or 6 a.m., you know, not that I would know, but we're not talking like the dead of night by any means. Some people have complained of headaches when entering the stadium, feelings of dread, or wartime imagery in flashback form. Mike Huberty says that the Confederate soldiers are not only seen during tailgates and in the stadium, but all over Madison. Quote, just a few weeks ago, I was talking to a guy who had lived in Madison a long time and is the head of the security at a factory. He said one of his security officers came up to him and said, you're not going to believe it. I saw a Confederate soldier walk through the room. And then when I chased it, there was nobody there. He couldn't believe it and thought it was crazy because he wasn't familiar with the history. But these are the types of stories that you hear. Other accounts reinforce this. According to a Reddit user named Sunspot Mike, quote, I just heard this year of someone seeing the ghost of a Confederate soldier at the old Rayovac plant in Winnebago Street, and they thought it was crazy because why would a Confederate spirit be in Wisconsin? They didn't know about the POW camp. Huberty said that these soldiers and sightings like it are potentially explained by the, quote, stone tape theory, which is a paranormal theory that essentially says that human beings make these kind of metaphysical impressions during severely traumatic events, and that these impressions are preserved in that place where the event happened, playing on loop as a kind of residual energetic recording. Are you following me? We've talked about this theory and theories like it on past episodes in a way that they aren't specifically spirits, but a residual humanness. It's inspiring almost. To switch gears, there were also some unexplained tragedies at Camp Randall that reinforce not just the ghostliness, but its own dark history. Back in 1915, the bleachers collapsed in the stadium during a game. In 1922, the remaining wooden sections burned down. A cursed section of the stadium, perhaps. Thankfully, in either of these cases, nobody that I researched was injured or killed. On July 2nd, 1982, a student named Donna Moraz was stabbed to death in front of Camp Randall Stadium. While they originally thought it was connected to a spree of serial killings that had been happening in the area for over 14 years, which hopefully I will do an episode on in the future, it was later ruled as unrelated and to this day remains unsolved. Close to Randall Stadium is another haunted spot, a statue of Lincoln that's been around since 1919, just 2 years after the stadium was constructed. The bottom halves of two bodies were discovered when the land was initially being cleared for the Lincoln statue back in 1919. The top halves were discovered 3 years later. The identities and stories still a mystery. According to reports, people still feel the presences of these unknown souls when they're in the area standing by the statue. Quote, during the early 2000s, there's an undergraduate student showing around his friend's 20-year-old sister who is visiting from Taiwan, Huberty said. She didn't speak much English, but seemed to have a good time. That is, until they got to the Lincoln statue. Then she became visibly terrified and said that they had to go. The friend doesn't understand why, but later she tells her brother while they were standing there, two heads appeared behind Lincoln's. They were both smiling at her. The brother and the friend thought she was joking, but then they learned about the two men who had been buried there. They believed her after that. And then there's Forest Hill Cemetery, where the Confederate mass grave still lies. There's a rumor that a lady in a large white hoop dress wanders the grounds, looking for her deceased husband. Today, of course, Camp Randall is a place of mostly celebration, where 50 to 90,000 fans convene to celebrate football. And yet, much like our collective and cultural being, good is often tied to darkness. Truly, Camp Randall's athletic and collegiate glory is just one piece of its fascinating and devastating history.
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries.
And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.